There's a very common sense reason gold is pushing to all-time highs right now. Actually, there are several reasons. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. Since Jan 21, the cost of living is up 17.9%. The national debt continues to skyrocket, now above $34 trillion, causing many to worry when the House of Cards will come crashing down. A presidential election year that'll have massive implications on the future of this country. All of this adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that's why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. Text STRANGE to 989898 and get your free info kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold, too. Just text STRANGE to 989898 to claim your free info kit and to protect your savings from uncertainty today.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Tribal instinct coming down in 3, 2, 1.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
Welcome to another episode of Strange Planet. Thanks for sticking me in your ear. On this episode, The Tribal Instinct, The Sacred Desire for People and Place, a brand new book from writer Forrest Moretti. And let me just crib from the back cover to give you a sense of where we're going for the next 50 minutes or so. While the world is seemingly moving away from tribes, many are not. They're seeking ways to reconnect with their people and form communities that have far more meaning and purpose than neighborhood HOAs or anonymous internet forums. For those struggling to understand who their people are and where their place is, The Tribal Instinct will offer a welcome breath of fresh air into your search. Forrest Moretti graduated from Wake Forest University with a degree in religion and music. He applied his trade in the film industry for several years, working on several Muppet movies, four seasons of Dawson's Creek, many other films and television shows as an audio engineer, editor, composer, animator. He transitioned into technology as a designer and developer for visual effects, software, and CTO as Next Glass, now called Untapped. And he's also creator of the popular My Incredible Opinion and Vax Baby video series. He spent the last few years researching and writing about some of the most enigmatic riddles of science and medicine, notably autism and polio. He's spoken at events and conferences around the country, but prefers to stay close to his writing, and he does most of that in his 1992 F-150, where many of his manuscripts were composed. He's the author of the Autism Vaccine, Crooked, Man-Made Disease Explained, Unvaccinated, The Moth in the Iron Lung, and his latest, The Tribal Instinct, The Sacred Desire for People and Place. Forrest, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Richard. I'm great. It's good to be here again. I think it's been a year or two since we've spoken. I'm always glad to hang out with you for an hour. Thanks for having me on.
Likewise. Well, you're a powerful writer. This is a powerful book. It's kind of a survival guide in a way. I guess the question we should address, though, is what are we trying to survive? Because there's a wonderful line in the book. You say that we are about to engage in, or maybe we are engaged in an epic battle between the good, the beautiful, and the true, and those who reject it. I love that line, but just explain what you meant by that.
Well, I think people sense that there's something going on right now. There's some battle. Now, some may take it on as sort of a spiritual essence, which I think is a valid way to describe it. Others may take it as a battle between collectivists and individualists, you know, those who would prefer to be left alone versus those who would prefer that together we as a group decide what's best for the world. And there's all these sorts of things at play. I think they're all valid assertions about what's going on. My understanding is sort of the meta narrative of all these truths that people like you and I seek to understand is there are people who reject hierarchy, who reject design, who reject beautiful things. You know, the world in and of its own accord is not likely to produce beauty or art or truth. You know, it requires work to get those things to happen. And it's like, have you ever gone on a hike by a creek or a river and someone has stacked a few stones on top of each other? And it's always a really neat thing to see someone's taken the time to balance these things. Now, we don't find those things by accident. They weren't created by accident. It's very rare that they would. If you see it, you know someone took the time to make it. Now, there is an instinct that people have to knock those things over. There's just something, you know, as a kid, do you remember this? If your brother stacked some blocks on top of each other and you walk in the room, what is it? What is your burning desire? It's to knock it over. It's just something in us. And same for sandcastles, this sort of thing. So I think there is a part of humanity that is currently rejecting all of the effort, all of the work that humans have put into building beautiful things, to building intricate things, to having truth, to having religious faith. You can see it in architecture. You can see it in music, in the fashion industry. You know, anywhere you look, there is this race to erase any distinction, any sort of meritocracy that might suggest it's worth trying to get better. You know, it's worth trying to better yourself. It's worth it to try and suffer for the greater good, to make an investment in things so that, you know, people, as the saying is, people will sit in the shade of the trees, that you never get to experience. So, I don't know. It's a long conversation, but I think it has a spiritual aspect to it. I think it has a once in a human history aspect to it. I don't really see this ever having happened before, where people are rejecting the notion of gender distinction. People are rejecting the notion of any sort of distinction at all between humans, between animals. You know, it's a dangerous thing.
I guess for shorthand, sometimes we refer to it as the culture war. This, as you say, this erasing of boundaries, national boundaries, the distinction between sexes, between species, this kind of this top-down, one-size-fits-all type of approach, this system to replace culture and language and tradition and faith and all of these things from the top down. Sometimes we refer to that as, you know, globalism or the globalists versus the populists. It has many names. But the spiritual aspect, and I agree, this is spiritual warfare. And as a Christian, we, well, you begin the book talking about Rod Dreher's 2017 book, The Benedict Option, which is basically a strategy for Christians in a post-Christian nation. He's basically saying, do like Benedict did back in the 6th century in Rome. You know, we're not going to be able to survive in this secular world. We need to retreat. We need to strengthen our Christian institutions. We need to build a parallel society, homeschool, and so forth. And a lot of people that I know have taken that to heart. Mm-hmm. But you say that's not enough. It's not going to do the trick. It's too late in the game for that. Explain.
Well, you know, I have a saying, peace takes two, war only one. And the desire, I appreciate the desire for peace. I really do. And I'm not a pacifist, but I'm also not a sadist. I abhor violence. I used to take Japanese beetles and turn them over on their feet before I went to bed each night during the summer where I grew up, because I couldn't go to sleep if I thought there was a single beetle struggling to right itself on the driveway outside of my house. So just, this is my little anecdotal evidence. I'm a very peaceable person. At the same time, I understand that there are worldviews that don't allow for divergence. They don't allow for people to believe differently. Mine does. My understanding of the world allows that other people may disagree with me, and I'm okay with that. Unfortunately, there are a lot of belief systems that don't. And to suggest that retreating, even if only temporarily, and sort of letting the storm pass you over, it may have worked hundreds of years ago. I don't think it will work now. I don't think the interconnectedness of our society will allow for it. I don't think the vigorous nature in which certain ideologies want to defend themselves will allow for it. I think there are things coming into play in the future, like digital currencies, digital identification. There are all sorts of tools which will preclude people from being able to just sort of ride it out without a very intentional move to prepare themselves for it. So I would love if you could say, hey, you know, let's just hunker down for 20, 30 years. Let's wait a generation and this will all be over with. And you and I and all our buddies and friends, we can go live amongst the Amish and the Mennonite in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I would love for that. I would want nothing more for that. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen. I think, like I said, peace takes two, and both sides are not willing for it. I'm willing for it. I don't think the other side is. So I do think vaccine mandates, digital currency, digital identification, all these things that we've seen really start to surface in the last couple of years, I expect them to increase.
So that brings us to the tribe. If we are not going to, survive this epic battle through the Benedict option, then we must seek out tribes. So let's get into, let's define, what do you mean by a tribe?
Well, before I even explain that, I will say this notion of tribe, the way I even came up with it was this sort of feeling of emptiness that a lot of people have. I certainly, you know, have felt it. Other people have felt it, I think, very acutely in the last few years, as people like us who have, let's say, resisted mass vaccination or said, hey, wait a minute, maybe digital currency isn't the way forward. We have felt this increasing isolation from friends and family. And at the same time, you know, the rise in dystopian fantasies like The Hunger Games or The Road or these sorts of visions of the future where everything has gone wrong and people are banding together trying to survive. I just started to really think, why do we feel that? What is that desire that I feel, that instinctual desire of belonging beyond my favorite sports team, beyond whatever church I go to. I mean, there are human connections that happen at a much more primal level that most of us aren't experiencing. And many of us, the younger folks especially, have never experienced. And, you know, I have a son, he's just graduated high school. He may, you know, get married and start his own family sometime soon. And I was thinking, what do I want for him and his family? And it's not where we're currently headed. You know, we're in a very bad direction in my mind. So I started realizing that there is an instinctual desire of humans to belong to some group, some bond, like I said, that extends beyond your nation, that extends beyond whatever church you have to go to, but whatever church you do go to. And as I've mentioned in the book, part of that, I sort of realized through natural disaster. You know, after a hurricane, we get a lot of hurricanes down here. And it's amazing the neighbors that sort of come out of the woodwork and start offering to help each other. Like, hey, does your chainsaw work? Do you mind if I borrow it? Or I'm too scared to use a chainsaw. Would you mind cutting this branch so I can get my car out of my driveway? I mean, do you have enough gas for your generator? Like all these sorts of cooperation comes out of the woodwork before and after a hurricane. And it's always, it's a bittersweet thing to see, because as soon as the storm is gone and power is back on and the generators are off, it's like, okay, back to your little shell and nobody talk to each other anymore. And I've missed what those things bring. And, you know, Sebastian Younger, the guy that wrote The Perfect Storm, has a book called, I think it's called Tribes. And he talks a lot about this, about how people in war, and not just soldiers, but even civilians who suffered through war, there's something afterwards that they miss about it. It's a very... it feels unintuitive, but they will freely admit that they were happier during the war when they suffered. And I think that's part of my search for tribe, is what has technology brought us that's good? For certain, there are those things, but what has it brought us that is bad? And that's the thing most people don't really have that inner dialogue to try and go over and try and understand.
So just getting back to Dreher's book, The Benedict Option, yeah. and you say where the church is not going to do it for us on its own. There's a line there you say something about it's not about tribalizing the church, or it's about sanctifying the tribe. I don't think I have that right, but
yeah, no, that's right. Actually, there's a tendency, and this is, I'm not sure, you know, the demographic of your listeners, but I'm a Christian, and so I sort of approach it in that mindset, and it can apply elsewhere, but let's just for the moment assume that context. There's a tendency for people to make their church into a tribe, to hope for it to be the tribe. So with the absence of those intimate bonds that humans have enjoyed for most of our species, the history of our species, the church has sort of become that. You know, we see these people on a Sunday. We may see them on a Wednesday evening. We share our needs with each other. We pray together. I mean, this is a very intimate act, is to bear your soul with other people and say, I need help with this. My marriage is failing. My son is addicted to this. And my father is done this and is in jail, and all these sorts of things you share with those people. You know, outside of church, that doesn't happen very often. My regret is, unfortunately, church doesn't provide enough of a bond for tribe, because normally churches are based on, do you like the pastor and do you like the music? You know, do you prefer drums and guitars, or are you a pipe organ choir guy? Right. And a lot of churches split it down the middle, and they have like a 9 o'clock old fart service and then a 10:30, you know, fog machine and laser beam service. And it just feels so horrible that this church is like split down the middle because of a musical difference.
Desperately trying to remain relevant.
Yes. You know, the doctrine, interestingly enough, for a lot of people, doesn't really matter. It's like, pick some theological nuance, and you might have people over here and over here, and they go to church together all the time, don't even know about it. They don't even know that nuance exists, and they're perfectly fine with it. And I think that's fine. My point is, I think tribe is designed to have alignment on many more things than a church would typically allow for. It might be political, it might be sociological, it might be all kinds of things. But my understanding of the way things should work is tribe comes first and churches emanate out of that. You have a group of people that you are bound together through thick or thin to help each other, to know each other's needs and all these things. And maybe different churches come out of that. There may be a sort of modern, non-denominational, typical sort of mega church style thing. And then there might be some sort of reformed Calvinist, very orthodox thing over here. And that's fine. But to suppose that you're going to find enough people to really bond together just from a love of particular style of music, or just from a appreciation for a particular doctrine, I don't think it's enough. I think tribes need more than that. You know, their children need to marry each other. They need to speak the same language. They need to grow up in the same place. These remote church services, because of COVID and all these other things, are interesting and have probably served some value. But to me, this is like the opposite direction of the way tribe. There is no remote tribe. There is no Zoom call for tribe. You know, you live together, you break bread together, you borrow each other's lawnmowers on the weekend.
You bury each other.
Yes, yes. That is much more profound, but yes, you share each other's burdens even in death. And that's what we're missing. That's what I think most of the world, most of human history has enjoyed that, taken it for granted because it was assumed that's the way the world would always work. And we've gotten into the technological age where international travel is cheap enough and national identities are poor enough that we have a mix of cultures and languages that don't lend themselves to this. They make it, there's some good that comes out of it. Now, people always say, what about the food? And what about the music? I'm like, yes, those are good things. I love some quesadillas. And I think there is a loss of identity through the disappearance of tribe that I think people are just starting to realize. I mean, cut me off if you need to.
Well, we'll pick up on that point when we come back. The Tribal Instinct, Forrest Moretti. Back with more in a moment.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The truth will set you free. Free. But first, it will really tick you off. Welcome back to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Writer Forrest Moretti is here. The new one is The Tribal Instinct, The Sacred Desire for People in Place. And we were discussing, what makes a tribe. There's also it's finding, you know, your people, and we can get into a discussion about how, well, who are my people and how do I find my people? But there's also, as is mentioned in the subtitle, and that is place, a sense of place. And you point out, I'm not even going to try and pronounce it, but there's a Welsh name that has no translation in English. It has to do with a sense of, you know, longing for a place that you can never return to.
Mm. Yeah, they call it Hyraeth. I mean, I'm sure there's a million variants on that. I'm probably saying it wrong. But they call it a feeling of homesickness for a home to which you cannot return, to a home which you may not have even ever known, but you sense it's there, you feel it. And it's a strange pain that I think when people hear about the word, they sort of realize, yeah, I felt that. I never knew how to put it into words, but I have this feeling of having lost something that I didn't know I ever had. And my take is that that's tribe. That's this feeling of people and place, this bond of humanity that you don't get at school. You don't get it through your job. You don't get it through sports team affiliations. You don't get it through church. It really comes only through the sacrifice, the alignment, the unity that comes from having a group of people that are extremely tight and live together. And as you said, bury their dead together and marry together and all these sorts of things. I think it's, you know, I thought about this, if you don't mind, real quick. Imagine there was no such thing as exercise or sports, okay? And technology had gotten to the point, as it has now, where we have computers and air conditioning in our cars, and we have cars that we can travel along the road in. All these sorts of advances that have allowed us to get fat and to lose muscle tone and become unhealthy. And imagine we were sitting around here pondering, we're missing something. Look at us, we're all morbidly obese. We can't walk down a flight of stairs without our knees hurting. We can't walk a mile without getting out of breath. Why do we feel this way? Imagine the confusion of that. Mm. And then someone were to come along and say, hey, guess what? I've got an idea. You're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm going to take some metal plates. I'm going to form them into circles and put them on the ends of bars. And we're going to go to a room and we're going to like move them around. And somebody would say, what are you talking about? You're crazy. And you say, trust me. If you do this 3 times a week, you may start to see some improvement. You'll start to feel less flabby. Now, okay, this is obviously an anecdotal example. We are at this same place, in my opinion, with tribe. We have lost something, like in my analogy, it was health, it was exercise, it was physical fitness through hard work. We've lost something, and that society and technology have provided for us in such a way we don't struggle. We can, if we need eggs, we go to the grocery store, we take out a piece of plastic, a little card, and swipe it through, and boom, we've got eggs. Everything that used to make us healthy through hard work, we have sort of realized, you know what, we have to make an adjustment. We have to simulate through going to the gym, through watching what you eat. You can't eat whatever you want. You have to be a little more careful. Like, we've made that adjustment as a culture, or we at least recognize that we need to. In that same way, we've lost, instead of lost muscle tone or health, we've lost meaning and purpose and belonging. And we don't know what to do yet. We don't have the gym to go to. We don't have the DVDs of the workout videos or the aerobic step thing. I mean, this is what the tribal instinct is, in a way saying, hey, guess what? You feel it. I know you feel something missing. It's over here. Unfortunately, there's not a building you can go to. There's no weights you can lift. It's a mindset adjustment. It's a lifestyle adjustment. It's a purposeful desire to find your people and your place and start living together. But I think it's just as crucial to our mental health as eating well and exercise are to our physical health. You can look and see humankind is not doing well mentally. You know, that we are at a bad place. I mean, we are drugged out to the hilt, and we still suffer, even with the best science can offer. And my feeling is, we've got gyms, we've got sports, we've got diets, we've got organic food. We need to do that same thing for meaning and purpose. And it's not going to come through the gym, and it's not going to come through exercise or eating well. It's going to come through tribe, finding your people in place.
Who are my people? How do I find my people? How does
Well, it depends. It's funny. I actually started, I bought a domain, tribal.org, and I'm sitting on it right now because, I love your bumper. When we came out of the break, it says truth will set you free, but it's going to hurt sometimes. Or is that something along those lines?
It's going to tick you off. Yeah.
It's going to tick you off. Yeah. You're used to this. I'm used to this. We have grown a muscle where we enjoy the twisting of the mind. They're like, wait a minute. I always thought it was this way, but you're telling me it's something different. You know, we've developed that instinct to know when we're basing our belief on consensus or on historical conjecture. And a lot of people aren't there yet. You know, COVID has been a blessing in disguise in that a lot of people have begun to question things that they assumed were true. And I thank God for that. Although the price that we may end up paying for it, it may be far greater than we currently realize. Regardless, there are people that are starting to feel that tribal instinct, that search for people in place. But I don't think there's enough people yet. I haven't put the website up yet. But essentially what it is, I call it, it's almost like a dating site for families. It's a dating site for people who may be single, they may be married, they may have a multi-generational, and they may say, you know what? We feel this. We feel this tug to find our place, a place where we want to be buried, a place where we want our children to grow up and live. And we want to find alignment on all these different issues, whatever they are. And it might not be music. It might be something more profound than that. And I think something like that is going to happen. I mean, there's a thing called intentional communities. I think there's a website for it where people are already doing this. They're mostly hippies, you know, who are disenfranchised with the world and have sort of a Marxist collectivist mindset where they want to share each other's burdens perfectly, where there's perfect equality and no meritocracy. And that's fine. I support them in doing that if that's what they feel like they want to do. But I don't think something like that exists yet for people of faith. And I don't think they're desperate enough for it yet. You know, years ago, I was shocked that more people weren't questioning vaccines or other, you know, sort of low-hanging fruit of the conspiracy theorists like ourselves. People are starting to question that now, but I think the notion that your life has no meaning because not because you have the wrong job or not because you're not making as much money as you want to, but something much more profound that money will never buy you. I don't care if you've got $100 billion to your name. And in fact, you're more unlikely to need tribe. The more money you have, the more unhappy you're likely to be. So how do you find them? It's hard right now. I think you're seeing people start to sort of reach out and start to feel that tug. I think seeing counties in America, you know, we have states and they're within the states, there are counties, and you see counties are starting to say, you know what? We don't belong to Oregon. We're more of an Idaho. Mm-hmm. This is something that just happened. I think there's several counties in Eastern Oregon that have said, we don't want to be here.
And Northern California.
Is that right?
As well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think when you start to see that actually go through, and they voted, and as a county, they have voted to officially say, we are indicating our desire to do this. Now, there's no real legal precedent for it. I think it would take the approval of Congress and the Senate and some other parties. Regardless, that is essentially the canary in the coal mine of this tribal instinct of people saying, we don't want to be here. Now, you might argue that's just a political shift is all it is. I think it's more profound than that. I think it's far more profound.
I agree. I think there is a mechanism for it because that's how West Virginia became West Virginia. It split off from Virginia.
Yeah, I was curious. I knew that that had happened. And I know there are counties in Western Virginia that are trying to move into West Virginia proper. I didn't know if that was a one-off or it was something that actually had some language in our legal framework that would, you know, sort of make it official. It must in some way, I suppose.
Why do the, what do we call them? The illiberal progressives, the secularists, the materialists, whatever you want to call them. Why do they hate tribes?
Well, my take for what, I mean, they hate nations and tribes are the component of nations in my mind and they can't even stand nation. So if they don't, if they can't handle the concept of nationhood, they're definitely not going to like tribes. My understanding and as someone who's not a liberal, I can only presume my take is they more than anything reject the notion that nature is full of inequality. They reject the notion that this is necessary for creation or nature to function properly. I mean, I use this example in some other book, but imagine a mousetrap made of 9 identical pieces. Okay, 9 identically shaped pieces. This is not a machine. It would never do anything. For a machine to work, you need things that can bend. You need things that are stiff and hard. You need big things. You need little things. Like everything serves a purpose in the machine to make it work. I think there are a lot of people who don't like that. They want everything to be perfectly equal. They reject hierarchy of any kind. So this is clearly evident in feminism and modern feminism, I'll call it, and trying to presume that all genders are equal and the notion that maybe men should be fighting in wars and maybe, you know, women are precious and we don't want to create a society in which we send women into battle. Like, I think that's a noble thing. Some people would disagree. It's not about whether women can fight as well as men, although there's certainly a case to be made for that. But regardless, I just don't think it's right. I think there's a difference there and I want them to be different. I'm right. Okay with that.
Yes. I mean, this is the new religion, right? It's not even equality, it's equity. And people tend to confuse, they think equity means equality and they're two different things. We'll take another time out, Forrest, and we'll get sure. into, you mentioned feminism. It's interesting, the birth of 3 separate forces, if you will. You cite they all coincidentally, or maybe not, happened in the very same year. Feminism is one, and we'll talk about the other two as well. Forrest Moretti, author of The Tribal Instinct, back with more right after this.
Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
The truth goes through 3 stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. Third, it is accepted as self-evident. You're listening to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Forrest Moretti, The Tribal Instinct, The Sacred Desire for People and Place. So we were discussing, you know, why the left, the progressives, why they hate tribes. And you say, for the same reason that they hate the nation state. They want to obliterate borders. They want to obliterate boundaries. And you mentioned feminism. And I think, one of the great hoaxes or whatever, the feminism, that they equated equality with sameness, that men are the same as women, is kind of an example of that. So this idea that they hate inequality, which is a natural part of the universe and creation, rather, as I'm sure you'll get into, they hate hierarchy. Let's just unpack that a little bit. What is it about, for example, hierarchy and inequality that they just can't countenance?
Yeah, well, again, from the Christian context, it is the original sin. If you look at the Genesis account of creation, what was the very first sin? It was mankind, through Eve or Adam or however you want to argue that, realizing that, hey, God, the creator, it's not just your buddy. He's above you. And in fact, you are nothing compared to him. You have none of the sovereignty, none of the omniscience, nothing. You are literally an ant. And that was the first sin, was this realization that, wait a minute, I thought we were all buds here. You know, it's like Adam and Eve and God. We're like a little, little tribe. And whether you accept it metaphorically or literally, it doesn't matter. It's the same outcome, which is humans didn't like the notion that something was above them, that there was something more noble than them, something more beautiful than them. And that was the initial sin, which you might cast it in terms of pride, that started the fall of man. So fast forward to however many thousands of years later, however you want to think of time in the biblical context, we have humankind doing the same thing. We're rejecting the notion that some things may be stronger than others. We're rejecting the notion that some things may bear children and others may not. All these sorts of idiosyncrasies of creation that extend into plants and animals and even beyond Earth into the cosmos itself, there's all sorts of symbiotic relations that make the universe function. And humankind doesn't like that. They want everything to be even and fair. And it's not fair that they're faster than me. And it's not fair that they earn more money than me. And this is childhood 101. These are children who never grew into adults, who refuse to accept that nature is full of inequality. And in fact, it's a necessary component for humans to survive. We wouldn't survive without it. So unpacking it starts all the way back, in my opinion, in the creation story, where we rejected the very first inequality, which is we're not God, we're different. And it's continued to the point now where we have humans refusing to accept that animals are lower on the totem pole than they are, refusing to accept that our planet may be more beautiful than any other planet in the solar system. You know, all these sorts of things, you see surfacing in different ways. But at the heart of it, it's humankind rejecting the notion that there are differences, that there are hierarchies, and that not everything is going to be fair.
So when you were asking this question in the book, The Tribal Instinct, about, what happened to tribes, and you mentioned, the feminist movement, and you actually pinpointed this, I didn't know, you pinpointed it's the birth of the modern feminist movement to 1846. And that same year, we also had Karl Marx.
Yeah.
And
1848.
1848, yeah. Sorry. And then we had Charles Darwin. How did those all work together?
Well, this is another, you know, my books are a ton of work, a ton of research, and they're for a very particular audience. And I've got a book that I've been stewing on. I call it 1848 because the year is very significant. I think 1848 in the arc of human history from beginning to end, that will be probably one of the most significant landmarks. I mean, you might think of the switch from nomadic lifestyle to sedentary. You know, these, you remember these things as kids, right? What are these big things, invention of electricity and so on? I think all those things will pale in comparison to what happened in 1848. And essentially, you know, Karl Marx publishes Communist Manifesto. Okay, that's one. You have this gal named Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who with some other ladies wrote this thing called the Declaration of Sentiment. And that is essentially known as the birthplace of feminism, is in, I think it was at Seneca Falls or somewhere like that in New York. And they had a conference to sort of begin the notion that of feminism. Now, there were some valid things, as is the case with everything. If you're an honest person, you allow for the fact that there were some legitimate complaints they had there. What we've ended up with is not legitimate. So Karl Marx, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and then it wasn't actually Darwin, it was Alfred Russel Wallace, the original anti-vaxxer of the world, who actually, I would argue in many ways, is the founder of evolution. He just didn't have the PR and charisma that Darwin did. So Darwin gets all the credit, but Alfred Russel Wallace was, in a lot of ways, he was actually pushing the needle a lot harder than Darwin was. But in 1848, Karl Marx publishes Communist Manifesto. Elizabeth Cady Stanton and her gals have this Declaration of Sentiment, birthplace of feminism. And Alfred Russel Wallace travels to Brazil to collect specimens for this thing he's got, this idea they call natural selection, or that's what they ended up calling it. All of those things happened in 1848. They are what has become communism, feminism, and evolutionary thought. The three things, the diabolical trinity of the decline of mankind, in my mind, these three things together have sort of coalesced into forming the decline of humanity. I think if you trace humankind, there was a lot of progress on that point. Our art became more beautiful. Our governments became more free. We started to understand that humans have natural rights, and then the government is given permission to do things rather than the other way around. I mean, there were a lot of advances in humankind, and then 1848. And I think it's sad to say it, I'm an optimist in a lot of ways, but I think you look at architecture, you listen to music, you look at family structure, you look at the role of faith in people's lives, you look at war and the ability for humans to kill each other en masse. You look at medicine and science and the ability to kill each other en masse. I think you'll see 1848 was the beginning of a decline that I think will continue for a very long time. Hopefully I'll be able to finish that book one day if I can write some books that sell better and don't have, because it won't sell very well. It's a very interesting story, but I think it's too cerebral, or I don't know. Us knuckleheads like you and me, we like stuff like this. So hopefully there's some other people out there.
But all three of those forces, movements, philosophies, are in contradiction to tribalism, because tribalism is by nature, it's about inequality, it's about hierarchy, it's about, you know, and that's one of the beautiful things about creation, God's creation. I mean, it contains hierarchies, but as you point out, it was a great line in terms of evolution, how evolution basically concluded that we we are here. We are who we are because we are a success of our success of our mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mistakes. We are flawed, but we can fix those things.
Yeah, I think I said that. Creation feature, not perfection, but instead the most successful mistakes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Evolution. Forget the mechanic of it. Amino acids, primordial soup, natural selection, et cetera. Forget that for a moment. And just think about what it supposes. It supposes that creation is not perfect, that it's the result of mistakes, and that it can be perfected. And that, in fact, we are probably infinitely away from perfection if time goes on forever, which we, in some worldviews, you assume that it does. This suggests that we are so far from achieving our maximum potential. And that, in fact, we are probably living amongst some horrible errors that we just haven't realized yet. And this is always sort of the interesting thing as someone who's, I don't believe in evolution in terms of the classic Darwinist version of it, and that there's just no mistakes anywhere. Like everything just seems perfect. There's not a lot of pruning that needs to be done. I mean, everything is sort of perfectly suited, and you feel like there's got to be some mistake. I mean, you might argue that like the flightless birds or something like that is, but regardless, I think evolution is difficult to square as someone who's a fan of the good and beautiful and the true, in that it suggests things aren't good and they're not beautiful and they're not true. It suggests we're living amongst a lot of mistakes that need to be corrected. And given the fact that human pride proliferates typically through the suffering of other humans, what you see through feminism and communism is the desire of certain enlightened humans to project their understanding of the way we need to achieve that perfection onto others. And that's how you end up with Mao Zedong, and you end up with Pol Pot, and you end up with all the other suffering, the millions dead, the gulags. This is how you end up with it, is the worldview that things need to be fixed. You know, things aren't good. We as humans need to fix it. I mean, C.S. Lewis has a famous quote about saying, forget the evil guys. It's the good guys that I'm afraid of. The guys that are convinced they have the moral high ground to do what is right, they will always cause more suffering and destruction than a guy who will freely admit he's evil.
Right, right. Yeah, they're the good intentions.
Yeah, road to hell is paved with good intentions. Yeah. Couldn't be more true, especially when you get people with money and access to technology and government power.
So it seems, though, although we're in the early stages, and you mentioned this website tribal.org, and we don't have the numbers there yet.
It's not live. It's there's nothing there.
But yeah, the idea that it seems to be the search for people and place seems to be the natural response to these forces of globalism. Because we're starting to see it break out now, for example, in Europe. And we had a prime minister or Giorgia Meloni in Italy, who was elected on a campaign of, faith, family, and culture. And there's some data I've seen from Pew Research, which tends to suggest that is a growing trend in Europe. And we're seeing, countries like Hungary or Poland, more sort of conservative populist movements. It doesn't happen as quickly in the U.S., but you have parties that virtually overnight, it seems, in Europe can either attain power or at least have enough influence to force, the government to become sort of less globalist and so forth. Are you seeing any trends that give you any, you talk about being unabashedly pessimistic in the book, but are you seeing any trends that leads you to be somewhat hopeful about a return to tribe?
Well, I think it's inevitable. The timeline, I can't say. I think it's inevitable. My optimism or pessimism vacillates on whether can we get there peacefully. You know, my hope is we can get there peacefully. My hope is that, you know, typically there's a saying that it says diversity plus proximity equals war. And it's this notion that you get a lot of heavily contrasting cultures and people in place in the same place. And you end up with tension. And this is proven out time and again throughout history. Now, the hubris of mankind believes that this time is different. You know, if there's anything that humankind could have writ large on its tombstone when all is said and done and creation has run its course, it would be this time wasn't different.
That's right. Venezuela, this time we'll get socialism right.
Yeah, it applies to everything. It's not, you know, that socialism and communism are the running gag that this time is different. But we believe it in everything. We believe knowledge to be superior than wisdom, which is a real shame that society has sort of lost hold of the fact that, look, the wisdom of the ancients is valid. You know, okay, the Bible is sort of my wisdom of the ancients. Take whatever faith you have. There's a reason there's stuff in there, okay? If they're telling you don't do this, there's a reason. It's not because they were prudes. It's because they did it before and they realized it didn't work. I mean, this is, you know, my tribe, I call it Hunger Stone. What do you know what the Hunger Stones are? They're these stones that are buried underneath water in certain rivers in Europe. And when the water drops low enough, they have messages you can read on them. And one of them might say, all who read me weep, because it was predicting that drought was coming and famine would soon follow. And this is a hunger stone. It's a warning to others. If you see this stone and you can read it, you need to start doing something because you're about to starve to death. Now, in my opinion, the Bible is full of such hunger stones. It's full of such warnings, and we're foolish to ignore them. We think we know better. We think we're an enlightened people because we can we've got our cell phones and we can play video games on them, and we think we know better. The reality is we don't. We are dumber than ever. And if we reject the wisdom of the ancients at our own peril. So yes, we need to get back to understanding that there are customs and traditions that were put in place, not because they're prudes, not because they were unenlightened, but because they made the mistake already and they rejected it and tried to warn future generations. Here we are throwing it out, throwing it in the trash, saying, we know better now.
The tribal instinct, the sacred desire for people and place. And I mentioned Amazon. How else do we get a copy?
You can get it through my website, forestmoretti.com. It's a little bit slower, but it's not Amazon, so people tend to like that. But unfortunately, digital and audiobook Amazon's got such a racket on that. It's very difficult to do a digital and audiobook any other way. But maybe one day we'll be able to do that soon.
ForestMoretti.com and MyIncredibleOpinion.com still up and running. Are you going to?
Yeah, I don't publish. I've really been focusing on books right now, a lot of books, but we'll see. It's always there. It's a silly thing. And sometimes I feel silly, other times not so much. I'm in a more serious mood right now.
Yes, I can tell. Well, this is a powerful book. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Great speaking with you again.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for having me on. Look forward to seeing you again.
You too.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Subscribe at strangeplanetpodcast.com.
And we are...